Knockout roses, climbing roses, hybrid tea, miniature, shrub, grandiflora, floribunda, polyantha, whatever you call them, whatever kind you have, they're beautiful. This hour, Summer Rose Care. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Aaron Style of Ryman Gardens in Ames and Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will be here. We'll get some pointers for how to get the most out of your roses. And then, of course, Richard and Aaron will answer your questions about the plants in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and roses are in bloom across the state. There are many different varieties. This hour, we're going to find out how to get the most out of the roses in our landscapes. Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, is here. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here today. And roses are looking pretty good right now. Is this kind of the peak season for a lot of different varieties, Aaron?
Yeah, a lot of roses. In particular, kind of mid-June are when they're really at their peak, and there's still a lot of them that look really nice even now.
So there are so many different varieties of roses, and of course, you know, people fall in love with whatever they think is most beautiful. But are there particular varieties that seem to do best in Iowa?
Yeah, there are. And it's true, there are a lot of different types of roses. And a lot of the care that you do during the summer applies to all of these types for the most part, although some require more care than others. The ones that I like the best for Iowa are what are broadly classified as the shrub roses or landscape roses. These are roses that are naturally winter hardy in our state. They tend to have much better disease resistance, so that the foliage looks better through the season. And many of them still have a lot of the great qualities that we think of from our more fussy roses, like the hybrid teas and grandifloras and floribundas, like repeat bloom, just really nice kind of double flowers and good colors. And many of them have fragrance too. So those are the... so. Things like the Easy Elegance line of roses, which are really easy to find at local nursery centers across the state. Of course, being from Iowa State, I have to recommend Buck roses, which we have a very large collection of and are nice roses that were developed at Iowa State. Oh So Easy roses. There's a whole bunch of different kind of shrub or landscape roses that are very nice for Iowa gardens.
All right. Well, let's talk about what we should be doing to care for roses this time of year. Now, we've had plenty of water.
Yeah, we have. Usually that is a concern,
yeah, right?
Right. Well, roses are not drought tolerant plants. So to have a good looking rose, you do need to irrigate on a regular basis. Kind of like it's the same idea with your vegetable garden. You know, they have the best vegetable garden. You have to keep it irrigated. And sometimes Mother Nature does a good job for you, and other times you have to provide that. Ideally, for most of the state, we haven't had to do this. But the latter part of the summer does not have to look like the first part of the summer. And we could just as easily be drier as opposed to wetter as we go through the last half of the summer.
So you got to keep an eye on it.
Right. Exactly. Got to keep an eye on it. And they do need to be watered. Watering deeply is important. And the other big thing is to make sure that the foliage does not get wet. And we're going to talk a lot about this a little bit later, but roses suffer from a lot of very serious, or actually a very few number, but very serious foliar diseases. And keeping the foliage as dry as possible when you water is beneficial to help keep those at bay.
All right, that's pretty tricky when it's as rainy as it's been.
Yeah, you can't control what Mother Nature does, but you can control what you do. And so every little bit can help. So
now we spent a lot of time talking with Linda Nave a couple weeks ago about mulch.
Yes,
that's also an important part of rose care.
It is. And roses do respond very well to mulch, and it helps helps retain soil moisture. It helps keep down those weeds that can compete with roses. And it helps keep soil from splashing. And a lot of that can help with disease management, too.
Is there a particular kind of mulch that you feel is best for roses?
You know, just about any type except for rock would work well for roses. I personally like shredded bark or a leaf mold. Coca hulls can work, too. I do stay away from rock, especially in the summer. It gets really hot, and that reflected heat can be really rough on any plant.
The reflected heat, but do roses like the heat? Do they tend to?
Most of them do pretty well with our heat. The thing they don't do well for us is the humidity. And again, it's those kind of those disease pressures.
All right. Well, let's before we start talking about diseases, let's talk about fertilizing.
Yeah. So roses respond very well to fertilizer. And really any type of fertilizer can be used on roses, whether it's just a regular kind of all-purpose balanced fertilizer like a 10-10-10 or something like that, or a special formulation that you found for roses. Either would be fine for your garden. You would mix up the fertilizer as it's directed on the package. And normally we recommend kind of three kind of fertilization times. One of them is now, or actually maybe about a week ago, where during their first major flush of bloom. The first one is as they're kind of coming out in the spring. And the last one will be sometime, the last fertilizer application will be sometime in the latter part of July. The most important thing when it comes to fertilization is that you don't want to fertilize late in the season. It pushes these plants to grow later in the season, and that new growth late does not overwinter as well, which puts a lot of stress on the plant. So typically we say by the end of July, stop fertilizing to help with that.
Now, a lot of us like to cut roses. If we have beautiful roses outside, sometimes we like to bring them inside.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to cut roses, is there something that you need to be careful about?
I think For bringing in cut flowers, you obviously want to make sure the stem is long enough. Usually we remove the foliage when we bring them in. One of the big things we always recommend is that anytime you make a cut on a rose bush is to find a spot where the leaf or the bud is pointed outward rather than inward. It helps keep the shrub more open, and good air circulation helps with the overall health of the plant. And so making sure that when you make a cut, that it's just above, maybe a quarter of an inch above, a leaf or a bud that's kind of pointed outward instead of inward.
Okay. Now, once the blooms are spent, how important is deadheading?
Deadheading is really beneficial for most roses. Now, those landscape roses I talked about earlier are the shrub roses. Tend to bloom okay even if you don't do a lot of deadheading. It's almost required for things like hybrid teas and grandifloras for them to look good. And so you want to remove those spent flowers. Many roses bloom in small clusters. So as flowers fade within the cluster, you can use the pruners to just prune out the individual flower. But once the entire cluster is finished, you'll want to remove that cluster down. Roses have compound leaves, and the leaves on the upper part of the plant tend to have fewer leaflets or fewer parts than the leaves on the lower part. And so you'll want to remove that stem to the first set of, or the first leaf or so that has five leaflets. And hopefully it's one that's pointed outward, and you can just print it off there. The big thing to remember when you're deadheading is to use nice, sharp, and clean pruning tools. There are a couple of disease and virus issues that can be really easily spread with dirty tools. And so making sure that you keep them nice and clean, maybe disinfect periodically with a solution of one part bleach to nine parts water can really go a long way if you're serious about keeping your roses healthy.
And why is deadheading so beneficial?
It promotes rebloom. So a lot of our roses have been bred to kind of do a better job of reblooming. When you think about the really old roses, most of them bloom once in the season, and it's relatively kind of early summer. But these newer varieties of roses do rebloom better. And when you deadhead, not only does it remove that kind of ugly faded flower, but it also promotes that plant to put out more flowers so that you can enjoy a bloom through the whole summer season.
All right. Now let's talk about disease.
Yeah.
You've been wanting to talk about disease the whole time.
Actually, you know, this is the question a lot of people have. And this is actually what made me think about doing this topic, because this year is going to be a little rough for disease issues on roses. It's been warm and it's been wet. And that is the perfect situation for two major diseases that hit roses, which are black spot and powdery mildew. And both of them, in particular black spot, really love warm, wet conditions. Black spot, you get a small black spot on the leaf. The leaf starts to yellow. Eventually, it falls off prematurely. It is very, very unattractive. And when it's really bad, by the end of the season, you'll have just some flowers on thorny stems, which, of course, isn't very attractive in the garden. So controlling that disease is really important. Powdery mildew comes up, looks like a dusting of white powder on the leaves. That really pops up when it's wet out. And both of these are diseases that, especially black spot, you'll want to select varieties that are more naturally resistant to this disease. As a general rule of thumb, those more fussy roses, the hybrid teas, the grandifloras, the floribundas, are more susceptible to this disease problem than our shrub or landscape roses, like the knockout roses or the easy elegance roses. So that's why it's one of the biggest reasons why a lot of us recommend those shrub roses, because they're more resistant to these diseases. But even in a year like this, the so-called resistant roses may still have some black spot.
Well, let's say you have a rose bush that has black spot this year. Things get out of hand and it looks awful by the end of the season. Does that doom you for next season?
Not necessarily. Mulching and good fall cleanup will help. That'll help kind of reduce the amount of soil that's splashing on the plant that may be transferring this fungus to the leaves that infects them. It will also help reduce the bank of that fungus if you get rid of the foliage, especially overwintering. So it's not necessarily mean that. But if you do decide to go down the route of using a fungicide to help control this, let's say you're thinking about taking them to the state fair or something, you know, then you will want to work on that more preemptively. Once you start to see the problem in a big way, it's too late to do a lot about it.
So you have to keep close eye on it.
You do have to keep a close eye on it. And as soon as you start to see issues, and if that is important to you, you know, a few black spots here or there are not the end of the world. It's when it gets really bad that it becomes a problem. So if it is really important to you, you want to start treating regularly as soon as you start to see it, which for most of us will be about now, if you haven't seen it already.
And in treating with a fungicide, do you have recommendations for how best to do that?
Yeah, you'll have to apply on a regular basis, weekly or biweekly, depending on the product. You'll want to rotate fungicides if you can, or find fungicides that have multiple active ingredients in them to have the best control, and making sure that you apply them, you know, early morning is better. Making sure that you thoroughly wet upper and lower sides of the leaves when you apply them. And of course, you utilizing them according to the label instructions.
All right. Well, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. We've been talking about summer care for roses, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about roses, but also your questions about any of the other plants or trees in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about summer rose care, but of course you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about any of the plants or trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And we'll start with an email question that brings up the very next thing that was on our list to talk about with roses, Aaron.
I knew we wouldn't avoid it.
No, this is from Steve in Kelowna, but he's not talking about roses in this case. But I have two Honeycrisp apple trees that have put on a beautiful crop of apples. Unfortunately, Japanese beetles have descended on these trees in swarms and have eaten a fourth of the leaves on both trees. I know it's said that they won't kill a tree, but won't apple production be affected if the trees lose most of their leaves to the beetles?
It will affect the quality of the fruit. They may not be as large. They may not be as juicy. So yes, it may do that. Controlling those is very difficult, though. And that's because the insecticides that you might use typically have a very short residual period, meaning that you spray the tree, it may be effective for 2 or 3 days, and then it's not anymore. And you may have a limitation as far as how often you can do it. So, for example, you may be permitted to spray every 7 days, but if it only works for 2 or 3 days, you're going to have a period there when you're going to have quite a bit of feeding. So it's very, very hard to control Japanese beetles on fruit trees, on small fruits like raspberries. It's just very difficult.
All right. And we better talk about roses, too, because they do enjoy roses,
they
don't
do. They do. They eat leaves and flowers. They can be really destructive on roses. It's one of their favorites. A kind of joke that's like Japanese beetle chicken nuggets or roses. Like, they just love them. Spraying is a little bit easier on a non-edible crop. But
right,
again,
we're not planning to eat the roses.
Right. But the same issues that Richard just brought up still apply in terms of how often you can apply and how long it's acting. And Japanese beetles are incredibly mobile, and they can come in from a long different ways, and they're constantly emerging, and they're in huge numbers. One of the best approaches you can take on roses, if you don't want to go down the spraying route, which is difficult, is manually picking them. They're big beetles. They're easy to spot. They tend to cluster. So if you go out early in the morning with a bucket of soapy water, you position it just underneath where there's a cluster of beetles kind of on the plant, and you tap that branch, they'll fall right down into the bucket and drown, and you can move on to the next one. This is a pretty like a daily chore. They will be back again in the morning. I've also, a lot of people talk about things like grub control, which isn't very effective because you'd have to get like your entire neighborhood to do it before it would have an impact because they so readily fly. And of course, we've talked many times about how the traps aren't that effective.
Right.
In fact, they actually promote more beetles than they trap.
Now, you mentioned earlier, some people are really, really into their roses and or maybe, want to enter them in a contest.
Yeah.
How about netting? Does that help with the Japanese beetles to actually protect?
They are big enough, the beetle is, to utilize kind of a fine netting and not kind of physically exclude them from the plant. And that could be effective. It's not attractive. It would be a lot of work. You'd have to build like a cage or something over it and then drape the netting over top of it. So Japanese beetles are active for a solid 4 weeks, and then they're mildly active for a couple of weeks on either side of that. So it's most of the growing season you would have this kind of funny net cage over it. But if that's important to you, then it might be worth it.
While we've been talking, this question showed up from Lynn in Iowa City. My rose leaves have holes looking like someone used a paper punch on them.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Is this a bug of some kind eating the leaves, and how do I stop them?
I wouldn't stop them. They're leaf cutter bees.
Okay.
So they cut those little circles out, and they use them for their nests. They are beneficial pollinators for us. They do not cause significant damage to the plant. They do not cause damage to the flower. And so I wouldn't worry about them. You'll probably do more damage for the ecosystem by trying to control them than they do damage to the rose.
And
sure.
Just be grateful that it's not Japanese beetles.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's go to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number. Joanne is on the line from Coal Valley, Illinois. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is about a flowering dogwood. I think it's a Kousa, K-O-U-S-A, dogwood. And then I have a little note about carnelian cherry. I don't know why I wrote that down, but I've been wanting to call for so long to say that my buds on the dogwood died. I have no blossoms, and it's about 3 to 4 years old. And I've just had a terrible time trying to get a dogwood growing. So do you have any good hints on flowering dogwood?
Well, the flowering dogwood per se that you see in the South, like in Georgia and Tennessee, we can't really grow that in Iowa. it's not reliably cold hardy. The Coosa dogwood is slightly more hardy. We have a few on campus here at Iowa State. And if it didn't bloom this year, it may have been due to the cold temperatures this past winter, that we had temperatures that were colder than normal in late December, early January, where it got down to like minus 20, minus 25. And those cold temperatures may have destroyed the flower buds. The leaf buds are separate, and the leaf buds are a little bit more cold hardy than the flower buds. As far as the Canelian cherry dogwood, that is a very hardy dogwood. You'll find that up into Minnesota. It blooms very early in the spring, one of the first things to bloom, typically around mid-April or so. And it has these very, very tiny yellow flowers in clusters. And it's a fairly nice plant. I would call it a large shrub or small tree that may get to be maybe 15, 20 feet tall and with a similar width. But it does very well in Iowa.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Joanne. Next up, let's go to Steve in Waterloo. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Hi.
My question is about tree peony. We acquired a healthy tree peony last year. It bloomed. During the winter, rabbits or some other friends ate it down to the ground. And this spring, instead of a woody stalk, we've got about a dozen typical-looking peony shoots, but no blossoms. Is there any way for an amateur like me to maybe select one or more of those and try to train it back into a woody stalk, or should I just start over?
I think this one, I mean, you probably lost a lot of the flower buds to the feeding. And over time, that new growth will kind of get a little bit more woody. So I don't know that you have to necessarily select any unless the plant is incredibly crowded or something like that. But most of the time, you know, tree peony is kind of a funny term for this plant because it usually doesn't look anything like a tree. It's more just because some of its stem is... It's really a peony that does not die completely to the ground. Giving it good winter protection, just putting a chicken wire fence around it over the winter so that this doesn't happen again in the future will probably go a long way. But I don't think you necessarily have to do anything special to get that back. You've just probably lost a season of flowering because of this damage.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Steve. 866-780-9100. Dan is on the line in Sully. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good. What's your question?
I'm relatively new to the area. I've only lived in Iowa a couple of years now, so I knew nothing about Creeping Charlie.
Mm.
So
welcome.
You should know this.
Yeah. But when I started tending to my lawn last year, I wasn't using a grass catcher. So unfortunately, I seem to have spread it over about 30% of my yard now. How do I take care of this problem?
Well, Creeping Charlie or ground ivy is a very aggressive perennial plant. It's low growing, so it adapts very well to a lawn situation. It's hard to kill. The best time to control that is in the fall. And you need to apply a broadleaf herbicide, and specifically one that contains triclopyr, which is T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R, triclopyr. And
all right.
You need to apply it twice, about a month apart. The first time, sometime around late September, early October. The second one a month later. And that typically does a pretty good job of controlling that weed. It's very tough. You want to get it early because once it starts to flower, it has kind of a small little bluish-purple flower. Then it produces seed. And so you can go out there in the fall and destroy it, but it may come back the following year from the seed. So you want to try to get it before it goes to flower, if you can.
Okay. So get it in the fall and then wait a month to hit it again, and hopefully over the winter it'll have some impact. It dies out,
yes. That's what it does typically.
Okay, so if I don't get it all the first year, try it again the next year?
Yep, I would. And I basically have a zero tolerance level for that weed because because once it gets established, it's very, very hard to control. And this summer I was mowing my yard, and I saw a little spot. I could just see it, and I pulled it immediately before it got really big. But it spreads very, very quickly. So in my thinking, you have to have either zero tolerance or you simply tolerate its presence.
All right, Dan, thanks a lot for your call. And next we'll go to Steve in Dysart. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Charity. Hey, I have a question probably for Richard. I'm growing hops in my backyard, but not for brewing purposes, just as ornamental. Hopefully,
that's
my wife.
That's a big ornamental. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a big one. We've got an arc that's growing on. It's looking real nice. My question is, I've got just one plant. So is that going to, they don't self-germinate, do they? I've got buds on it already, but are they going to be seedless or what's going to happen?
I'm not sure with just one plant if they're going to produce any fruit or not. That I don't know. They can get to be 15, 20 feet tall if you have the type of support. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they're going to produce fruit by themselves. That I'm not sure of.
Mm-hmm. Neither am I. I guess we'll find out. I guess we'll find out here in a month or so.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. Doug's up next in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Hi, Doug.
How are you today?
Good. What's your question?
I planted a maple tree last year that I bought from a nursery, and it's about a 12-foot blaze maple. It did real well last year, and this spring there was nothing on it. And I checked the top, you know, towards the top branches, and they seem to be pretty dried out. But now I have a lot of growth coming out of the base.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance that tree will come back or just dig it up and replace it and put a new one in?
Okay. Well, when you plant a tree, that first winter can be rather rough. And apparently this tree was not well enough established and it didn't survive the winter. But apparently the root system is still alive, or the base of the trunk is still alive. And for that reason, the top part is dead, but the root system is still alive, and it's trying to survive, trying to grow, so it's sending up all these shoots. It's possible maybe to select one of those shoots and let it grow, and it may become a nice tree in the future, but I would be inclined to remove it and put in a new tree because your odds of success are much better by planting a new tree.
And I think the odds of it becoming a nice tree are very low. So,
okay.
Yeah. And sometimes these trees are grafted, so it may not be the same tree either. It may be a different, because the root system is a different variety to the top part, and the top part has died. So if it's grafted, which they sometimes are, often are, actually, mm-hmm. It won't even look the same as a, what would you say, an autumn blaze maple, I think? So it won't even look the same.
It may not have the same color, the mm-hmm. same shape, right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your call. Let's do a few email questions here. This is from Lee in Cedar Falls. We had a lovely mother willow that was girdled by a beaver. We've tried cutting branches and starting roots in water to plant to try to save some of the original. What do you recommend is the best procedure with the greatest likelihood of success? We've planted one last summer and it's still alive despite repeated drownings, as we are in a floodway. A second one was washed away, and we're trying with one last hope from the tree before it died. We potted the rooted stem, but no leaves are coming out.
Boy, if it has roots, you would think it would send out foliage. So I'm not sure what's going on here. If it doesn't develop leaves very soon, I'm guessing it didn't survive either, unfortunately.
All right.
But typically, willows are very, very easy to root. So if they still have maybe some live branches on the existing tree, to try to root those, they can use water. They could root those in coarse sand or perlite, just keep it moist. And they typically root very, very easily.
And willows are trees that root pretty quickly. They say they're also mm-hmm. hoping to do the same thing with a hackberry. Can it be done?
Not really, no. Most trees do not root readily from cuttings, but willows have these preformed root initials right below the bark, so they root very easily. Cottonwoods do pretty well too, but most trees like your oaks and maples and lindens, hackberries, they just don't.
All right. And they've got one more beaver related question. The same busy beaver mowed down a neighbor's ceremonial birch. New bushy foliage came up. Any recommendation for trimming down to two shoots to concentrate the growth and rejuvenate the tree? Can you do that?
Well, they could do that again. I guess I would be inclined to maybe select three or four of those, if they have those, and remove the rest. And then next spring, if those shoots begin to leaf out, select what they think is the best one and keep that and remove the rest.
All right. Here's a question from Ryan. He says, I have a large planter that I've planted sugar snap peas in, and I keep losing blossoms off the pea plants. The blossoms form, and before they can be fertilized and start to produce a pea pod, they turn brown, wilt, and fall off. I can't seem to figure out why. The plant has produced some pea pods, and they're excellent, but a majority of the blossoms are rotting and falling off before they can become peas.
My first thought is that this may be due to temperature. There are a lot of vegetables that will drop flowers. I mean, even some vegetables that like it hot, like peppers, will drop flowers when it gets too warm. And peas are not a warm season crop. And so they would be much more inclined to react negatively to some of the warm temperatures we had very early in the season this year.
Yeah, temperatures in the 90s are not good for peas.
No. And especially being in a container, those temperatures are even magnified because the root zone's going to be warmer, and likely where the container is sitting. I don't know where the container is sitting for sure, but typically we put containers in spots that are going to be warmer, like patios and driveways,
sidewalks,
and sidewalks. And so that compounds the issue even more. So my guess is that it's high temperatures, which there's not much you can do about, unfortunately.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes to answer more of your questions. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. You can join us with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about any of the plants or trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Let's get to a couple more email questions, then we'll go back to the phones in just a moment. This is a question from Roy. He says, I see I have black spots and withering leaves on my tomato plants. I talked with a friend of mine, and they said that it could possibly... I'm sorry. That part is impossible to read. There's a typo.
Okay.
So is there anything I can do to prevent or stop mold? That's the question. That's the word we were looking for on my tomato plants.
Well, they probably have some type of foliar disease. Again, with all the wet weather, we're seeing things like septory leaf spot, bacterial spot, etc. So a lot of spotting on the foliage. And it usually begins on the bottom and then progresses upward. Again, splashing rain does it. And if you see that at this point, it's probably too late to do anything. But what I would do is in the fall, when the plants die, pull those plants up, remove that plant debris from the garden and destroy it, get rid of it. And then next spring, look for a different site where you haven't grown tomatoes for at least 2 years, hopefully three, because these pathogens can persist in the soil for a couple of years. So definitely look for a different site and hope for the best.
All right. Here's a question from Dan and Moline. From time to time, a few branches on my wide leaf hydrangeas will wither for no apparent reason. The rest of the plant looks fine. Is this a cause for concern, and do I need to do anything about it?
I wonder if they recover. Like occasionally, especially the big leaf hydrangeas, when we have a really warm day and if they're in the sun, they'll wilt. And then at night, they'll recover. And it's just because they're under a lot of stress with the temperatures and the direct sunlight. If that's the case, there's nothing you need to do. Now, if it's like a permanent wilt where the branch is dying and wilting and then dying, that could be something different.
That could be maybe a root rot, possibly, maybe verticillium wilt, possibly. But there really would be no control on that. You just simply prune out the dead and hope for the best.
All right. One more email questions and we'll be back to the phones. Susan from Charles City. Are there any heirloom roses that are available that might be a nice addition to the landscape? Do they have any particular benefits or drawbacks?
There are a few nice kind of older style roses. The drawbacks to them is that they tend to have one season of bloom. And so while they look really good the first week in June or the last week in May, depending on when they bloom or around that time frame, the rest of the year, they're simply just green shrubs that likely have black spot on them. So some of them have pretty good disease resistance. Some of them can get really aggressive in the garden in terms of spreading. The older varieties can do that sometimes too. We have a variety at the gardens called Ames that's really nice. There are a couple of more modern roses that have an old-fashioned look to them that can be really nice, that kind of wild rose, Iowa state flower style rose, a single rose. And I would be more inclined to find something like that than to truly find an old-fashioned rose, unless that rose had some kind of sentimental value for you. You know, you're trying to reconnect with something that your grandmother grew or something right. like that. Otherwise, I would be inclined to just simply find, there's one called Nearly Wild that is a nice old-fashioned looking rose, but has better disease resistance and actually reblooms some. Nice. That might be better.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Hayes is on the line in Coon Rapids. Hi, Hayes.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have close to a quarter mile of frontage road area in town that I have to mow, but it's very steep, too steep to do with a rider, and an awful lot to do with push mower, so didn't know if you might be able to recommend a perennial ground cover or something that would spread in a frontage road area that wouldn't get too tall and be unsightly and have to be mowed.
Well, you might want to go with maybe a mix of native grasses and wildflowers. That's a possibility. Once established, it's very low maintenance, minimal maintenance. And oftentimes, these companies have mixes for various sites. So they may have a mix for wet areas, a mix for dry areas. They may have a mix of lower growing plants, prairie plants, and they may have a mix for higher plants. So you may want to go that route where you destroy everything and then go back in with native grass and wildflowers, but maybe specifically lower growing native plants.
So it may be a lot of work in the short term, but save him a lot of trouble in the long term.
In the future, yes, yeah. Definitely.
All right, Hayes, thanks a lot for your call. Margaret's up next in Altoona. Hi, Margaret.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a question about a rose that was dug up from the family farm about 100 miles west of here in Shelby County and brought to central Iowa. They were taking down the farmhouse, and this rose was planted probably about 100 years ago. And we took a chunk of it, put it south of our barn on our little farmette, and it kind of languished there. And 2 years ago, we put it into an actual bed, and it just went crazy 2 years ago. It got huge, and it was gigantic and was doing really well. But it was that we had a landscape friend that was helping us, and he planted at the bottom of it a clematis, or clematis, I'm not sure how to say it, integrifolia. And I said, wait a minute, why is this clematis here? And he said, well, my plan is that when it's done blooming, then the clematis might climb on the rose and it would use it, and you'd have those blooms from the clematis. And now after listening to what you said at the beginning of the show, I'm wondering maybe if that's not such a good idea and I should move it. It's basically kind of going on the ground anyway. It's not really climbing up. And this year it did not do well at all, but then it's been a terrible year. So
right.
Who knows?
Well, Most of these older varieties of roses are quite winter hardy, quite vigorous and easy to grow. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't have serious issues with black spot. And if you haven't noticed it as a serious issue in the past, then it is more naturally disease resistant. Because
it was a monster. Yeah. It was a monster back on the farm originally.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it's so vigorous, and because it does only have that season of bloom. Clematis typically is not, except for the sweet autumn clematis, is not a crazy aggressive spreading clematis. And so this may work just fine. I wouldn't recommend it for every plant, but You know, one of the reasons why roses have become such popular plants is that before we started hybridizing them in the more modern times, they were very easy to grow and very robust plants. And mm-hmm. this one represents a rose like that. And so it may be okay to do it with this particular rose because it's so vigorous.
And about this particular rose, I'm trying to identify what it is. And I got an ISU address or extension, and I sent it. I didn't hear a response.
Yeah.
If I take some really good pictures, or how is there any way possible to identify what it is?
It's going to be very difficult.
I would guess probably not, just because there are literally thousands of different roses.
Okay.
And it's very, very hard to do.
And half of them are pink. So it doesn't help.
Maybe
mine
are
down.
Red. Maybe you can name it red. Something yourself, Margaret. Give it give it its own name.
That sounds like a plan. We'll do it. It'll be Grandma's Rose. Sounds fine. Okay.
All right. All thanks right. a lot for your call,
Thank
Margaret.
Thank you for your help.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Gary's up next in Iowa City. Hi, Gary.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. I got a marvelous collection of hostas in the front landscape, east exposure. A neat, tidy bed, you know, the soil's healthy, so on and so forth. But this year, and I'm wondering if it's the wet weather, but spots on the leaves this year, as robust plants as they are, I'm wondering if we got some bacterial fungi or something soil-borne. I don't know. Just wondering if you could have some direction on that.
Well, I would say this year hasn't been the best year for hostas. Many parts have had hail, which damaged the foliage. And then the extreme heat, some plants got too much sun and heat, and that actually burned them. So they're not looking as good as they normally do. They might have a leaf disease. That's a possibility. It's hard to identify. I think you're going to have to submit a sample to the plant diagnostic clinic for that. But I would think that if you're just seeing spots, it's probably not terribly severe. I would look for things like yellowing of the foliage, dieback of the actual foliage. That, to me, would be far more serious rather than a few spots.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Adele in Atkins. Hi, Adele.
Hi. We have a Norwegian red maple on our property that we planted 13 years ago as just a little guy.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, our farmer neighbor sprayed it with tree killer. And I wanted to see if there was anything that we could possibly do to help it.
The
leaves are wilting and black.
Okay. They actually sprayed it? Directly?
Yeah, he goes down the property and just sprays tree killer up into the air.
Okay.
And
well,
some of it got onto.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Probably nothing at this point, unfortunately. I would wait and see what happens, but.
Could it bounce back next year, or?
I think you're going to.
What should we watch for?
I think you're going to have a pretty good idea by the end of summer. That if you really don't see signs of recovery by late summer, the odds are not good for next year. So I would expect maybe if it's going to recover, maybe some new sprouts or new shoots with some nice
foliage. At
the end
of summer?
By the end of August or early September. And if you don't see that, if the existing foliage continues to decline, where it dries up and dies, and you see no signs of life at all, then that plant basically, I think, has died.
Okay, shoot.
So.
All right, well, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Adele. Sorry about that. Next up, Isaiah in Washington. Hi, Isaiah.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I'd like to know about the yellow wild parsnip and how it burns you.
All right. That's something we're seeing a lot of in Iowa. So you just want to know how it works?
All right. That's something we're seeing a lot of.
Okay. Isaiah wants to know a little bit more about wild parsnips. Who wants to tackle that?
Well, it's a very common weed in Iowa. It belongs in the carrot family. And basically two things have to happen to get this very severe rash. You have to come in contact with it with your skin. And then once that happens, when it gets on your skin, then if it's exposed to sunlight, then this rash develops on your skin. It's very, very severe, very painful. So it's basically coming in contact with the actual plant, yellow parsnip, and then exposure to direct sunlight. And then you get this rash.
So you have a window of opportunity to avoid the terrible rash if you do get exposed to it.
Right.
Because you can wash it off with soapy water.
Right, right.
How do you get rid of it if you have it on your property?
Well, it's a biennial plant. And so the first year it comes up from seed. It forms this little rosette of foliage. And then the second year it grows very rapidly, forming this fairly large plant and flowers and produces seed. And so you typically don't see this in a lawn situation. It wouldn't tolerate the pruning or the mowing. But you'll see it basically in pastures, roadside ditches. In a roadside ditch, you could simply mow it. That would take care of it. Or you could go out maybe in the fall, and you would apply a broadleaf herbicide, and you would basically kill the first-year plant, which is quite small. And then, therefore, it wouldn't be there next spring to go ahead and bloom and produce the seed.
All right, Isaiah, thank you so much for your call. Next, let's go to Brian in Hazleton. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. What's your question?
I've got a linden tree in the front yard in Hazleton, Iowa, and last week the leaves started to fall off it. They're whole. They don't seem to have any damage. I was just wondering why that happened.
Are they attached to the branch still? Like, are they like branch tips or just individual leaves?
Just individual leaves, lots of them.
Okay, and they're not turning yellow?
No, they're falling off whole. They look perfect.
I do not know. we don't know. Typically, what a tree will do, if a tree is under stress for some reason, some leaves will turn yellow and drop off, but they turn yellow. Okay. Squirrels will sometimes chew off small little twigs where you have a twig with maybe two or three leaves on it. But as far as a healthy green leaf falling to the ground, that I just don't know offhand.
Yeah, I don't either.
Okay.
Yeah.
What percentage has occurred on that as far as have you lost a certain percentage?
It just started this week. Okay. So, you know, it's not really that visible in the tree. It's very visible on the lawn.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Is the trunk apparently just fine?
No damage
to the trunk?
No damage. I can't see anything wrong with the tree.
And you're calling from where again?
Hazleton.
Hazleton.
Is it very wet there?
Yeah, we had a good amount of water the week before. Yeah.
Maybe because of very wet soils, maybe they're under stress and maybe dropping some leaves possibly. They like a moist soil, but wet soils aren't really their best site, so maybe that's a possibility.
Sounds like something to keep an eye on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing it's okay.
My first guess is that it's weather related, whether it's too wet or just, you know, a specific kind of storm that just knocked off a lot of leaves, but for some reason didn't blow them all over the place. Like something like that, or like hail does that too, but then leaves would be all tore up if it was hail. So that's probably not it. But my first guess is that it's something related to the weather.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your call. We have just a minute left, but I want to see if you have a response to this from Matthew. Does salting the earth work? My wife wants to try to kill weeds and sterilize the ground. I prefer a commercially made product, but I'm open to new ideas.
I would not use salt because if you apply enough salt, you can't grow anything there. And if you change your mind in the future, you're stuck.
Right. All right. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Aaron Stile, thank you.
You're welcome.
Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We will be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had production assistance today from Lucy McGeehee. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.